Blog Talk Radio. Validate your conference ID. Conference ID accepted. If you are the moderator, press the star key now. Otherwise, please hold.
Tell my baby, make it hot.
There are one participant in the conference.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yo, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo.
Oof.
Wow.
That was close.
I'm going to take a big sigh of relief here as we begin the program here on August 1st, 2007.
Can I tell you what happened?
It's summer. Catch me if you can. What's that? What?
I decided to do the show from the Bontarosa pool. And as I sat down, my mouse ball went into the bottom of the pool. My father had to go in and fish it out for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Milo just jumped in the water and got it for you, huh? Well, you had your dilemmas and I had mine, I guess. But here we are.
Yep.
Another hour of radio excellence about to ensue. I wow, no one will believe me if I tell them, so I'm not going to tell them.
I'd believe you.
What's that?
I'd believe you.
Nah, well, you believe me, but you come from the same tribe.
Oh, this is true.
So, we are, is Jeb with us yet or no?
No, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be along any second.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, well, usually, if you're new to the program, I'm Dr. Mark, and this is Professor Val over there, live from the Bontarosa pool, apparently, and this is Naked Summer Riff on This, a current event show that puts pop culture in its place. And we're going to be turning the show format a little bit on its ear tonight, and as we spelunk and dig and spatularize our way through
the
way of doing things.
There he is.
Parachuting in.
It's our sexy Philo.
Okay. Dr. Jeb smoothing on in there. and what we're going to do a little different tonight is take the focus away from the culture a little bit and focus on one unique individual in the culture that's leading the field that happens to be in the domain that we are featuring this week. So we're going to talk about Timothy Ferris and a lot about his profile and the way he has been using his resources to become what he is, a Soma star. So without further ado, I'm just going to turn over to Dr. Jeb for a minute. He's the one who introduced me to Tim through his book. And now that it's been, about 2 weeks since we've sort of digested, I guess, most of what he had to say in the book and on the website, what's the most significant thing that's changed for you on a daily basis in terms of what Tim's work's been able to do?
It's interesting you ask that because I have been making steps all week long, really, for the past... Well, steps in the last 3 weeks since I finished his book, and now I'm going through it the second time, really planning my getaway. And it doesn't mean getting away from where I live, but it's getting away from the sort of path that I have been on that didn't afford me the freedom to do what I need to do when I need to do it and with whom. And so it's been, you know, without going into too much detail, it's sort of getting all of my ducks in a row as far as, you know, my current practice goes, sort of getting it, automating it, setting up potentials for transitions into other venues, this being one of them. And so it's been, I'll tell you, it has energized everything that I do because I kind of set myself up a 3-year plan. So instead of being like this endless 30 or 40 year, okay, this is what I'm doing, all of a sudden I've got 3 years to get specific things done and finished and buttoned up. And the cool thing is that even if I didn't do anything but just do that, it's making everything I do have more meaning, have more flavor. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like we talked about, I said one time way in the past, it's like bacon. It makes everything taste better. Everything I do has more intensity because it's, you know, whether it's doing a side business or exploring, it's just, God, he gives so much options, or so many options to just making life as it is more fun. And then opening up the opportunity to say, okay, what if, okay, one of my dreams has always been to say, let's go and spend a year up in British Columbia on the island where my mom grew up. And until then, it was like, well, God, I gotta, what do I have to do? I gotta sell the practice, and I'd have to go and sell the house. It's like, no, he walks you through this recipe, which is really reproducible. So I'm busting. I am every day. I'm like, oh, it's like I'm on vacation. Just even in the same thing I've been doing, it's I'm on vacation because I've got all these new things to do and new things to check out. And it's you know, without being too queer or too cliche, this book has totally, totally changed my life.
Okay. Wow. Well, there's a ringing endorsement from Jeb. I'm going to give the audience a little bit of a kind of a thumbnail on Tim because you might not have heard of him yet. I mean, he's kind of everywhere at this point to us. I mean, everywhere I look, I see him, and it seems like he's popping up like there's a, you know, several Tim Ferriss impersonators walking around. So let me go to the blog here and take a look at that for you. Yeah, I'll go this way. Okay. What did I just do? Oh, okay. So Timothy Ferriss, his bio says this, and if you haven't been familiar with the language of the four domains, you know, by all means go to somerspace.org, and right on the homepage there's a little, you scroll down, there's a shorthand link that kind of gives you a capsule summary of it and some examples. But just if you have any familiarity with this work at all, just listen to the way he puts his bio here. He says, serial entrepreneur and ultra vagabond. You don't know his name. Already easy go. Timothy Ferriss, serial entrepreneur and ultra vagabond, has been featured in the New York Times, National Geographic Traveler, Maxim, and other media. He is a guest lecturer at Princeton University in high-tech entrepreneurship, and The 4-Hour Workweek is his debut book on ideal lifestyle design. He speaks five languages, runs a multinational firm from wireless locations worldwide, and has been a world record holder in tango, a national champion in Chinese kickboxing, which has a funny story about it, and an actor on a hit television show in Hong Kong. He's 29 years old.
Jeez.
He's been called the Indiana Jones for the digital age. So that's his bio, guys. He's larger than life in every respect of the word, and it's not like, you know, he graduated from Bob's College on the side of the road. He went to Princeton, and he followed the path. He followed the path as far as he could that the philos laid out for him and said, you know, first you get education, then you get yourself a good job, then you get a family and settle down, and then you work for 40 years. And if there's any time left over, you can retire and take a couple of vacations that you can afford to do. And if your health holds up, maybe you get to travel a little bit. And he said,
and just to give you there's a quote from his book. I'll give you a couple quotes to sort of reinforce that. He talks about in the first chapter of his book, he says, do I need to be an Ivy League graduate to sort of do this lifestyle design? And he says, no. And then he goes on to say, grads from top schools are funneled into high-income 80-hour-per-week jobs and 15 to 30 years of soul-crushing work. I love the language he uses, soul-crushing work.
Soul-crushing work, 50 years of soul-crushing work?
And 15 to 30 years of soul-crushing work has been accepted as the default path. How do I know? I've been there and seen the destruction. This book reverses it. I mean, he's just so right on. And then just real quick about, you know, the fact that he's eco, and this is, you know, always makes you laugh because I was reading this to you before you ever had the book, reading his timeline about himself. And after his birth, he goes to 1983, nearly failed kindergarten because I refused to learn the alphabet. My teacher refuses to explain why I should learn it, opting instead for, I'm the teacher, that's why. I tell her that's stupid and I ask her to leave me alone so I can focus on drawing sharks. She sends me to the bad table instead and makes me eat a bar of soap. Disdain for authority begins.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's
when I read that to Mark, Mark's like, oh, that's Eco 101.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my first experience was in kindergarten when I refused to go back in the classroom because I wanted to play outside by myself in the corner with this Spalding ball I found. I said, oh, I wanted to go inside now, and I refused to go. And then when I got back inside, I got assigned to take care of a girl who had two broken arms who had a runny nose. So, you know, disdain for authority started right about then. And he gets into a lot of his behaviors and the emotional side of making this huge paradigm shift, because there's not a lot of support for it, you know, out in the world. I mean, he's making radical statements that, you know, I'll get into here in a second, but But the ultimate thing that you get to learn about him is that Ecos are rule breakers, and he is a guy that took it upon himself. I mean, he, by all means, he should have stayed where he was to play it safe. I mean, he had the education, he had the background. Actually, he built his own company up and was working. You know, he left Silicon Valley. He was working by himself. 12-15 hour days and making $40,000 a month, which is, you know, how many $40,000 a month do you need to be happy?
Well,
what he wasn't happy about was the soul crushing part. And you know, even if you're working by yourself 12-15 hours a day, there's not a lot of time left to do anything else, you know, run this business. And he was, I think, based out in San Jose, and he was running his supplement company, and he was dealing with European accounts and Asian accounts, and just basically the sun never set on his business. And that was the problem. So he decided, it was sort of like, I don't know if it decided, it just kind of bubbled over. He ran away, like Ecosa wanted to do. I think it was to Europe somewhere.
Yep, one-way ticket to London.
Yeah, and he just refused to interact with his company. He just let all the emails dump out and just didn't really try to interact with his client base or anything else. And surprisingly, his business got better. Because what was left, and this is one of the things that he had a sort of an epiphany about, and I'll talk about it a little more, is this concept of the 80-20 rule, the Pareto principle. And this is something that made me kind of like really understand why this guy is able to do what he's doing, coming from the eco perspective, is that what the 80-20 principle doesn't tell you, which all the books are always talking about, they give you sort of the superficial line about, you know, 20% of your patients give you 80% of your business and that kind of thing, is that what it doesn't tell you is that is the way your brain is set up to experience reality. 80% of the stimuli that come in is filtered out because it's similar to other stuff, and all we do is shuffle the memory around. So only 20%, one in five signals that you get from the environment are truly novel and can potentially get your attention. The rest of them, you just go, oh, I know what that is. And it doesn't perturbate the system. Here's a guy that said, I'm doing all this work in the 80 side and wasting all my time and energy, where basically it gets me right back to square one. I need to focus on the 20% that's going to get me out of this hole. And he went from working 12 hours a day to working 4 hours a week in a couple of years because he decided to dismantle the model. And his acronym for it is DEAL, D-E-A-L, Jeb, why don't you walk us through the way he kind of cut himself this deal and shares it with us in the book.
What he does is he talks about, first of all, he goes through the acronym just to get him to sort of highlight the steps that one has to go through to do lifestyle design. So first is defining what you're going to do. And you have to define what it is that you want, and sort of he goes through in the book the whole definition of what lifestyle design is and the 80-20 rule, and then the E stands for elimination. And so you're going to understand that if you're craving these more novel experiences, like you just said, what kind of hit me just with you saying is that he put 100% of his work time, or as close to 100% of his work time, into the 20% of the work that was creating, that allowed him to live the lifestyle, so that he could then take the focus more of 100% of his time, or the rest of his time of luxury time, on the 20% of his life that most of us don't even focus, get 20% of our life that's novel. It's probably more like 90-10. So he said he's going to create novel experiences for the rest of his life. So he says, first of all, you got to define what it is that you want, and then he takes E for eliminating. You kill off, just quoting his book, E for elimination kills the obsolete notion of time management once and for all. It shows exactly how I used the word of an oft-forgotten economist, and that's the whole 24-hour, or that's the whole the 80-20 rule. And then he goes to A, which is automate. So you got to automate your systems so that you can, so that like he did, and one thing, before he went to Europe, he did make it, he took the effort and he said, I'm going to actually automate as much as he knew how at the time. So he gave his assistants and his customer service people very clear signals about what he was actually going to be, how available he was, which was not very, and when to communicate with him, which was not very often. So he did do that, and he automated as much as he could so that he wasn't having to worry about how much money is in the bank or my bills getting paid. He automated all of his stuff. And then L is for liberation, which is creating, he calls it, L is for liberation is the mobile manifesto for the globally inclined. And again, if you're, if you know, you may be a person who doesn't want to go around the world, but if you have the capacity and the ability to it, to do it anytime you want, that's where the liberation lies and the freedom of being able to do those things. So the DEAL, he sort of came up with this acronym of DEAL, and that's how you go through it in terms of implementing this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And if you've read Tim's book and you have a comment to make, by all means, jump in here. It's 646-478-4847. That's 646-478-4847. He also gets into a lot of the nuances that happen in terms of, okay, fine, you're going to do these 20% things and identify these things to get leverage. But he also employs another principle that is sort of given lip service in the business community is the Parkinson's rule, where you'll conflate, as he calls it, you know, the importance of a task proportionate to the time container you put it in. So, you know, the easy way to explain it is like people that cram for a test. You're going to learn this information because you don't have much time. There's no time for error. So he puts this sort of leverage on himself that not so much, it's not like he's going to blow off work and do low-quality work for 4 hours. No, he's doing high-intensity, extremely proficient work in a short period of time. It's like a sprint. So it's not like he's going there and he's just going to tread water for 4 hours and move paper from one side of the desk to the other. He works in a high-energy state for a short period of time so that he can then have long periods of recovery. And this goes extreme, like right hand-in-hand in the principles we talk about with interval training and all the other things we talk about with respect to wave theories, the way the nervous system works, is that we
don't leverage our lives that way. It's like taking a sprinter or somebody running a short distance who's expending a high amount of energy at a high quality compared to somebody who's running a marathon where they're expending a tremendous amount of energy over a long period of time versus a tremendous amount of energy in a short period of time and then taking a rest. And it goes, mm-hmm. Hand in glove. I was just thinking that when you were just as you said that about Irv or Dr. Dardick there and his work and how and the funny thing is I would love to get Timothy hooked up with Irv somehow or get Irv his book so he can see his principles being woven together in not only in just this, you know, get on a bike and read and you know, breathe and pedal, but actually mm-hmm. in the actual sense of how to live your life, because of course we know that soft cycles don't work, but at the same time we're seeing a good example of soft cycles taken to the degree of how do you run your life, how do you run your business, let alone just in how you're doing your training for the concept of improving your health or reversing disease, well, creating health because you don't reverse disease. But yeah, it was that came out loud and clear about what he was doing there, and also how he talks about if you took and quantified. Like you said, it's quality work. And if you took and quantified the amount of dollars per hour that he's making when he's working, he might be earning $10,000 an hour versus, you know, spreading $40,000 in a month times, you know, whatever, 160 hours. He's doing in 8 hours making the same amount of money because he's doing that much more quality work, and he's automated it, so he's got people working from anywhere from $4 to $15 an hour doing tasks that are $4 to $15 an hour tasks versus him doing $10,000 an hour tasks.
Yeah, and that's one of the things he makes a big distinction. But,
losing you.
My phone today has, like, it's almost like a bullseye in your back. It's like phone calls have been coming in here almost by the second. So I'm just like, every time the phone rings, the eco angst is coming out. I'm going to get to that in a minute. One of the things that that Tim really emphasizes in the book is this sort of pedestalizing an efficient worker rather than an effective worker. And he says that people spend so much time trying to make their work tasks more efficient and conservative when really what you want to do is focus on being effective and productive and not so much trying to tweak the thing, which takes more time. So he says to himself, what's the most important thing I do? And what's the most important thing I need to do today? And he will give himself 2 hours or so to do it, and that's it. And so it's like he identifies the target, and then he gives himself a limited amount of time to get something done, so that it forces a lot of old behaviors out of the window, because the old behaviors are there to consume time, because what's the payoff for 9 to 5 is that you got to sit at your desk all day long. Even if you're more productive in 2 hours than everyone else is in 8, you've still got to justify your existence by sitting at the desk. So that's one of the things he does to sort of get leverage on making these changes, is that if you can cut a deal with your boss that if I'm going to be this productive in a short period of time, I don't have to come into work as much as everybody else. I could work elsewhere, and separate my work location from where I live. And this is the beginning of sort of decentralizing your existence and not being so bound by, I can only make money in this building from these hours in this location on the planet, and I get 2 weeks off a year and a couple of sick days and soul crushing. So Eco says, if I can raise my productivity level to where it's 4 times as much as my peers, I could cut a deal with these people and get out of here. And that's exactly what he's encouraging the Dilbert Nation to do for themselves. And he gives you not just the philosophy, he gives you the map. He gives you the links. He gives you the call these guys, do this. So he doesn't give you a lot of excuses for not doing it. Actually, he gives you more and more reasons and compelling reasons to at least give part of it a try. And even if you can just get to the point where you can define that you're not coming from your best, and that you're sort of exchanging the calendar days for sort of a fixed existence, he gives you the cost of that. And he does something called dreamlining, and it was an amazing thing. When I've done that with some of my clients since I read that part of the book. And in dreamlining, what he says is most people don't fulfill their dreams, not because they're not capable of it, but because they don't budget for it. They don't even know what their dreams cost. So he has a calculator on his website, and he walks you through what is called his TMI and his TDI, which is the targeted monthly income and the targeted daily income, because most people focus on their yearly income, and that distorts things because there's a lot of wasted time in there. But if you know how much money you got to make in a month or a day, then there's not a lot of wasted time, because the status quo is going to be condensed down to that, which makes you look for more opportunity instead of waiting around for it or just hoping to get a raise or something comes to you. You go to it. So it's much more of an active way to do it.
Well,
and that's why I thought he was able to get out of the just the eco thing. I'm not going to go along with the paradigm that's there. No, he put a lot of different rules in place that are more universal principles, like Pareto and Parkinson's rule. Mm-hmm. It said instead of rising to the level of your incompetence, which is the Peter principle, he's got a lot of principles going on there. He says the Parkinson's law says no, get leverage on yourself by putting things into a smaller container so that you get the state you need to get in to get leverage to get out of the rut, and don't expect the world to do that for you. Don't expect the world to give you the impetus. You got to give it to yourself. So, what were you going to say, Val? Is that her?
Well, she's got an Anto dog who's pissed. It's Eco Week. That's what's going on.
Oh, okay. I heard something, a yip or something over there. Okay. Well, so that's sort of an overview of the book and some of his philosophies. I wanted to get a little more into his profile now, if we could. We said he was eco, and, the reasons why were pretty obvious in his bio, but just to give people an idea of how we get to that, is that you have to look at what an eco is, and it comes from those first 4 years of life to understand that this is when your imagination actually becomes, sort of the front of the bus. At 3 years old, the brain is now able to expand its horizons to not just go on the literal world it's in, but to actually develop a little bit of an inner world where it can take off and it can pretend. And that's what ecos do most of the time. That's why just kidding becomes almost everything that they're saying. It was a joke, just kidding. And you can always tell an eco is explaining himself out of trouble because reality is bigger than their imagination at 3 years old, and they get themselves in a lot of trouble sometimes when they confuse that. So here's a guy like Tim, very creative guy, very, very... just an ebullient personality, creating literally a world of his own, saying, there's other people out here living this crazy lifestyle that are jumping around the continents and exchanging houses, and they're doing it on shoestring budgets, and they're all over the place. And he said, if I can connect the dots here, I can go live that life rather than wait till I'm 65 or 70 to hope it's still there and appealing to me. And so in his book, it isn't just that he's eco. That said, I'm not going to go with the convention. But then he put in a new system of rules so that he was... It's like it's not enough to break the rules unless you're going to surpass them. So he said, "Okay, I got to come up with a better pattern here." So,
but you know, he's very exo how he implements stuff. Yeah,
he's got all the secondary domains working for him to support his eco-ness, and that's really what most people don't do. They get a job that doesn't support their lifestyle, and instead of arranging it so that it serves their lifestyle, they serve it. And he says, this is looking at him, you know, semantically here. Eco is my primary domain. My ultimate payoff is that I'm free and I'm happy and I'm out there doing what I want to do and I'm able to have adventures and Indiana Jones in the digital age. That's pretty much, you know, what he identified himself as. So once he realized that, you can't do soul-crushing work and call yourself Indiana Jones. So he said, I need to get my secondary domains, these behaviors that are not natural for me, but I can acquire them from other people to support this. So he had the Princeton training, which gave him the conventional paradigm. He didn't throw it away. He tore it apart and reassembled it. So he, like you said, he exoed it, and he took the technology that was there, and he started connecting the dots. And one of the first things he realized was that I don't have to do all this minutia, and he hired all these virtual assistants. But he didn't just hire them here in this time zone. He hired them in India 18 hours ahead of him so that when he left at 5 o'clock, the work was being done overnight. And he also figured out that when you're dealing with people up the food chain, don't call them between 9 and 5. The secretaries are going to screen them out. Call them between 8 and 8:30, and call them between 6 and 6:30 when you go right to their voicemail. So he was doing cold calls, and everyone was sitting around going, you know, from A to B in the phone book and sitting there one page at a time. And he actually had leads calling him back because he had only called people before and after the hours when their shields were up, so to speak. So things like that. And then he became completely onto about it. His belief system changed because he got to the point where he realized that these things like the 80-20 rule and things we mentioned before were not just idle, you know, business principles. They actually had value for him. And he started to live his life, not just his business life, but the way he exercises, the way he packs for trips. He always packs very light. Talk about travel light to the darkness. This guy travels around the world with less than 10 pounds of stuff on him.
I love what he talks about. He talks about he gives the whole thing of how to pack, and then you get there, and then one like the next day he's like, no, throw all the stuff away, all the crap away that you brought that you don't need, you know. So
yeah.
Even once he's like eliminated, once you get there, he still says throw half of it away, you know.
Right, and it's that type of a mindset that he's not trying to accumulate more material stuff. He's not doing it for the typical auto reason of let me get rich and sit on top of this hill and beat my chest like King Kong, and let me go the other direction. Let me experience as much as I can, which is an eco motive, and share it with as many people as I can, which is the big payoff for having the experience. It isn't enough for an eco to just have an adventure, Charlie, an adventure. It's the eco wants to be able to share that because it frees more slaves, and nothing makes an eco more happy than freeing the slaves.
That's true.
So
yep.
It's a big payoff being an eco. Is that I don't want to see. It's not so much that I don't have to live a soul crushing life. I want to make sure everyone doesn't live a soul crushing life because it's stupid. And the ecos don't tolerate stupidity. They don't go along with the program. They're not good followers.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, the last of his domains that he talks about, because he never mentions, you know, a lot of it, but he does talk a little bit about relationships in there, the final part. And he talks about applying these principles to different relationships and the way that he can sort of, in real time, sort of edit the way he's going to communicate with someone depending on what he wants to get to know. And he has scripts in there for dealing with customer service and dealing subordinates, you know, all the normal management stuff. And then he says about 20 pages later, but I didn't do any of that in my company. I took the human element out completely because that's the part that you get conflicting advice from. The Ontos say kick everybody in the ass, and the Philos say hug all your employees and treat them like family. He goes, I couldn't stand the noise, so I took them out. And he automated all of it. And he gave payoffs, like you said, he talked about before, about when he hires a virtual assistant, he gives them a task, a low-level task, and he gives them a certain amount of time, and then he gives them a checkpoint in between to check in with them to see how fast they've completed the task, because it's not the amount of hours they're working again, it's how fast can they get a task completed well. And that's the way he sorts. So he has every continent, he has his people there, Canadian ones and ones in India and all over the place, Europe. And he has them not competing, but he has them sort of on a kind of a vicious cycle of, okay, here's the next level of weighted task, and how fast can you get this done well? So instead of giving them things that overwhelm them, he's actually giving things that give them more confidence as they work with him, and they don't feel burdened by the guy. You know, so that's another thing that Eco's. That's why when Eco's are in positions of being a manager or being a leader, they often give away the farm and they give away their authority because they don't want to overwhelm people. And so what they end up doing is they don't delegate well, they take on too much, and they get top-heavy, and so they get less efficient at that point, and they get less effective as a leader. So those are exactly. Uh-huh. So just to kind of spin it for a minute, you know, this is the guy who was working, you know, 12, 14-hour days running his business down to 4 hours a month, or 4 hours a week, sorry. Maybe he's 4 hours a month now. Checking his email every 10 to 14 days, that kind of stuff. And he had so much going on at a certain point. You just read his bio, it's insane what he was doing. The concept that he was communicating was work for work's sake is not worth it. Just to put in the hours is not worth it. The payoff is that it's to free up to go do things you really enjoy. And I didn't get the sense that any of his adventures, whether it was the Tango Quest or the Chinese thing that he won by figuring out the rules, looking for the loopholes, he knew he couldn't beat these people who had trained for 15 years in martial arts. See, he read the rules, and what was it, a day before they weighed them or something like that?
Yeah, day before. What he did was the week before weigh-ins, he wanted a massive dehydration program. So
right.
Lost 28 pounds in 18 hours, weighed in at 165 pounds, and then hyperhydrated back to 193 pounds.
Right. He was fighting in a weight class of 168, though.
Right. He's fighting, so he weighs in at 168, hyperhydrates back to 193, and then the technicality in the fine print of the rules was if a combatant fell off the elevated platform three times in a single round, his opponent won by default. So he just bum-rushed them and went in there and knocked these guys off their can and off the platform three times, and then hardly even threw a blow, was just knocking him off the platform, and he won, by a technical knockout.
and pissed off everyone that was there because he didn't play by the rules in their mind morally. He just won because of this technical loophole, which I'm sure they closed with an iron fence. But he gets to put that on his resume now that he won this championship, which is why he did it. You know, he did it for the adventure, not just for the win, but he did it for to see if he can get away with it, basically, and he did. And then a lot of times we don't take that road less travel, not because we don't think it's going to be fun, but we think there's going to be punishment for it. And he was willing to take whatever happened as the result because he wanted to find out if he can do it. I think he does a lot. He calls all these things experiments in lifestyle design. It's not like he's saying there's a science to it yet. He's still doing the work, and he's using himself as the guinea pig most of the time.
He's living his life. He calls them experiments, but really it's about taking that 20% of the things that really jazz us, those 20% novel experiences, and making that 100% of his life. So he's probably got 80% novel experience and 20%. The stuff that gets filtered out, which is most people's 80-20, he inverted the 80-20 rule.
Yeah, and it's hard for people to understand that haven't really, you can hear these things. I mean, Tony Robbins talked about them for years live with passion and all that stuff. But when you get that general sort of philo, wind up your skirt kind of a thing, sure, it gives you the rush, it gives you the emotional rush, but it doesn't give you leverage because you need both sides of your brain to make these things stick. And what Tim's done, it's almost like he weaves his way through the book that way, that he's able to to give you the genuine sort of internal, authentic emotion about, God, this soul crushing crap is killing me. I don't want to do it. And it's one thing to realize you don't want to do it and just quit and disengage. But it's another thing to replace it with something not only that surpasses it, but something that's simple. He didn't complicate his life at all. In fact, he made his life almost completely devoid of anything complicated. He talks about a low-information diet. This is a guy that's, you know, running a company that's global, and he's got all these things going on. He automated all of it. And he created a lot of synergy within his network because, like you said before, don't bother me unless the problem is costing more than $400 because I'm $10,000 an hour. So, you know, don't bother me with these petty concerns. And that gave those people, down a couple levels of him, a lot of authority, a lot of autonomy, which is what another eco-signature is to have autonomy within the system so that it becomes open and spacious and there's a lot of room to move around in instead of the typical Philo, you know, squish everybody together and make sure there's no infighting and you know, screen everyone's emails and, you know, make everyone work sort of in this kind of a mental a prison like that. We're all a family here, but I'm reading your emails, you know.
Yeah, but then what he also does is he's writing the book. Like you said, he weaves really among the four domains to give so that it's appealing to everybody, but it's also... It creates a symmetry so that as you're reading it, you're not getting, you know, he'll give you a bit of Onto, but then he'll give you like that real side. He becomes vulnerable where he's this first, you know, he's this eco and he's done all these things and he's like, wow, this guy's like, you know, Indiana Jones. But just like Indiana Jones, there's a vulnerability there and he exposes that. In June 2004, I'll just read this passage. He says, I decide that even if my company explodes, I need to escape before I go Howard Hughes. I turn everything upside down and, backpack in hand, go to JFK Airport in New York City, buying the first one-way ticket to Europe I can find. I land in London and intend to continue on to Spain for 4 weeks of recharging my batteries before returning to the salt mines. I start my relaxation by probably having a nervous breakdown the first morning. So here, you know, he's done all this stuff, but he goes, listen, I'm not telling you it's easy. I went in there and I just about, you know, shit my pants the first morning because I wasn't going to check my email. He had made decisions that he had committed to himself that he wasn't going to check his email. He wasn't going to make a cell phone call. He wasn't going to, you know, call his voicemail.
Hey, it's an addiction. It's a behavior that people put, you know, if you're not busy, then you're lazy. And people don't want to be called lazy, so they do a lot of acting busy, but they're not doing anything productive. And he says... page 83 of his book, he talks about lifestyle design is based on massive action, output. Increased output necessitates decreased input. Most information is time-consuming, negative. Think about this. Time-consuming, negative, irrelevant to your goals and outside of your influence. I challenge you to look at whatever you read or watch today and tell me it wasn't at least two of the four. And then he talks about how he got away not reading the newspaper and not engaging in all the minutiae by basically reading the headlines as he's walking to work. You know, and he was able to get away with it because people did not, you know, he knew that would make him sort of like conversant with the normal banter that was going on, but he didn't get bogged down in it like a lot of people do.
Right, he's not going to obsess about. He's not going to be staying up late at night worrying about global warming. He knows that global warming is an issue, and he's going to know if there was any specific issue that happened. He's going to know about it. You know. But he's not gonna spend any more time worrying about it. But if he gets into a conversation with a group of people where maybe there's a business deal to be had, he doesn't want to come off looking like he doesn't know anything about the world. So then the question he asks people is, "Tell me what's new in the world." So then he knows that's a way to engage people, but you're also going to get information, and now you don't have to go read the New York Times or go online or whatever. So.
Yeah, and on the Onto side, it's like, you know, there's a lot of feelings that come up when you start taking control of the way your life's going to go instead of letting it do the other way around. So he says, learn to be difficult when it counts. This is on page 91. And he says, in school as in life, talks about his experience of how he would be really hard on the people that were grading him in college. He would put them through hell. And I was the same way. I was the same way with proctors and TAs. I made sure I knew what I was being graded on, because a lot of times it's just personality. They don't like your face, and they're going to be tough graders on you. You want to hold them to a standard that was very exo, and that's what he made them do.
Oh, yeah, he'd go and beat him up. For, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, for 3 hours, yeah. He wanted to know all their prejudices, all their pet peeves. He was a merciless profiler. He said, so learn to be difficult when it counts. In schools and life, having a reputation for being assertive will help you receive preferential treatment without having to beg or fight for it every time. Think back to your days in the playground. There was always a big bully and countless victims. There was that one small kid who would fight like hell, thrashing and swinging for the fences. He or she might not have won, but after one or two exhausting exchanges, the bully knew not to bother them anymore. It was easier to find somebody else. And he says, be that kid. He says, doing the important and ignoring the trivial is hard because so much of the world seems to conspire to force the crap on you. Fortunately, a few simple routine changes can make bothering you much more painful than leaving you in peace. And he talks about it as information abuse. That's the way he frames it. So if you start thinking about how many hours you spend fending off the world that's trying to get at you, whether it's advertising or whether it's just trivia and gossip and things like that. And I think of all the BS that goes on with with Paris and last week with Lindsay Lohan, is that there's so much money made in the tabloids, consuming these little, dramatic little capsules made up every night, entertainment television, reality TV. It's all there to distract you from a different life. So what happens is you live vicariously through all these other people who are having these, wild adventures and all that stuff, but they're all millionaires, okay? As bad as it is for Lindsay Lohan and Britney, all those people, or Paris, their life is lived like in a dog whistle level compared to yours, and yet you're content to take their droppings in the tabloids as a sort of a substitute for living that drone life. And I think back to how if you had him in a room with Michael Moore and Sicko talking about the grind people go through, the debt-based system that we live in, where this old model that worked in the 50s when we were basically half the size we were now, probably 150 million people, most of them English-speaking, most of them, able to do, skilled laborers, whatever. And now you've got a 300 million plus that have various degrees of being able to speak English, use technology, read, write, do all that stuff. How do you govern that massive amount of people in a world culture? And Tim's saying, you can't. So he doesn't fight the wind. And that's why his whole mindset is and this is, we got a couple minutes here before we start getting into kind of summing this up a little bit. There's an angst in every ego, and I talked about it before, of wanting to be free, and also at the same time being able to free others. And that sort of comes up every time you're confronting that stifling, soul-crushing element that the Antos inflict on the Philos, but they can't quite capture the ego. And it's summed up in a word, ugh. And if you're hanging around an ego who's running into low coherence on any given day, will come out of their mouth more often than not. Because
every 2 seconds.
Yeah, because that's the disgust. That's the trigger for them to say, can't do this anymore. Now, if you don't have anything to replace it with, then you got to sort of be Wile E. Coyote and try and plot your escape a little bit. But for the most part, when an ego goes into low coherence, they're not going to tank. They're not gonna go and just fade off. They're gonna replenish themselves and come back stronger the next time. So that's why every setback he took along the way, and he talks about, he was in school. He came up with a speed reading class, and he was selling tapes. He wanted to sell a tape about how I beat the Ivy League. When he was the guidance counselors, and that flopped, and he was down almost no money at all at one point. I was talking to his mom on the phone about it or something, and he ended up getting that job that he hated. That he worked there for a year, and then he ended up plotting his escape from there to start his company. And again, he ended up working himself into oblivion with the 12-hour days. So it wasn't like a straight line. That's the one thing I want to get across with the listeners tonight. Egos travel on the diagonal. They zigzag, zoom all over the place, and every once in a while, the blind pig finds the acorn. What he did in the transformation he went through from the late 90s to now is that he was able to take those secondary domains, I was talking about before, and he took all that exo information. He used that to hold his teachers accountable, and he used that to leverage his business with technology, and he used all the external systems he could to take the human element out. He talks about that all over his book. Take the humans out. of your life. They'll just ravage you with gossip and crap. So he takes them out. And then he says, be a bully about it. Be a little bit aggressive about it. Be assertive. Don't just let the authority come at you and tell you what to do, because the bully will pick on you every day if you think that you don't give him a hassle. So don't sit there and be the squeaky wheel, but be a squeaky wheel with a purpose. And then finally, only let those relationships that are mutually beneficial and supportive and co-creative flourish. Ignore the rest of the people. He went from 120 customers down to 8. And his company grew. That sounds counterintuitive, but you think about it. If you had to deal with 120 clients that you had to chase down for orders, they were on 3 different continents, you know, all these different time zones, and he's making no money, he's wasting his time, compared to having 8 core clients that make big orders that give you no hassles. You know, that's what he's trying to figure out for a lot of people. How do I make that happen for the guy that's, you know, working his 20 years as a cop somewhere, and he's trying to mess around with, you know, security businesses and stuff like that. How do I get them out of the grind? And that's why his book is so special to me, because he uses all the different parts of the narratives to create a life story that's enriching, and you can't read more than 2 pages in that book without laughing. It's not serious. It's not a thick business book that says, you know, when Jeb first told me it was like a 300-page book, I went, oh, man, it's going to be filled with a whole bunch of, you know, offers on his website and promoting his products, and he does a little of that, I'm not going to lie to you, but he also tells a very compelling human story that could relate. You could relate to almost, you know, half of the things that happen to him would happen to most people.
His website's not really, he's not selling anything on his website.
No,
he gives everything away.
He doesn't do the Anto thing of, well, here's my introduction, and if you want levels 2 through 5, you know, click here and string you out for a year trying to give you the information. He does what most Soma stars do these days, is that they outsource everything. They make it free and public and available and accessible to as many people as possible, knowing he's the source. You can't outsource unless you are a source. So no one's going to replace you. All they're going to do is parrot, ape, and imitate you, which only makes you bigger. And that's the big secret of the new way of doing things, is that you spearhead a movement and then you don't have to run the movement. He talks about social networks on his site. He goes, how come I'm not writing, you know, the 4-hour work week for moms? And he goes, because I don't want to let you guys do that. And so then the movement becomes a community, and the things organizes bigger than it would have ever been if he had to control every single element in the traditional Anto model of, that's my idea, you know, doing the McDonald's thing. You drew an M there, I'm going to sue you. and controlling everything, and the intellectual property where you end up being so obsessed with anyone, you know, using, God forbid, part of your idea. And when he knows, he got ideas from all over the place. So they give you the ingredients, they don't give you the recipe. You know, growing up, you know, in the chiropractic model of practice management, there was scripts. It was like you were playing the part of the chiropractor, and now I will poke my finger in the spine and scare you to death, you know. And it was so unnatural for me, and I used to get my, you know, it's like, I didn't go to Catholic school, but I went to chiropractic college, which is like the same thing. They should have nuns teaching us that stuff, how to do the questioning the clients. And it was the 4 S's. I don't know, did you get this rap going to school, the 4 S's?
No.
There's my you had to be simple, steady, specific, and, geez, what was that last one? I don't even know anymore.
Stupid.
Safe. Oh, yeah, safe.
Safe, yeah.
So I never got simple, see? and so you had 90 seconds to get the information from the client, and I would sit there and I would be, you know, asking the questions, oh, you have headaches, really, at night, day? And I would go, all these details. And they would go, steady, Filippi, steady. Because it was the hippie Ronell thing. So you had to go through the hippie Ronell format. And I would go, really? And just run in your family? Nope, don't go there. And it was like you had to run through the maze. And then the guy, Dr. McClellan, would just sit there with his hands on his forehead and go, simple, Filippi, simple. And I would just go, but you taught me all this neat stuff. I can't ask him these questions? And so it was frustrating, because I would get more information out of them maybe in 2 minutes that I could use for the next year with the client, and they would just fill in the blanks. And that's why he says, you know, throw this script away and be able to to use what your natural born talents are to relate to people, and don't rely on the cookie cutter, and you'll actually experience a lot more novel moments, which, like I said before, it's only one in five that are anyway. The rest of it's just it comes another repeat. So, all right, well, I think that gives you guys. You go on the blog. I got a little profile up of him there, and some links so you get to know him. Really recommend you. You spend some time getting to know Tim Ferriss and his work, because he's someone that can take any one of the four domains and move you through them, move you through the narratives, and understand that it doesn't matter which one of those four is your primary, you always need support from the secondary domains to be an open soma or a naked soma. That's why I think his work is powerful and can really get you guys started on the right foot. So we'll put Tim down. And any closing comments about Tim or his work?
No, I think we could get a year's worth of shows with Tim.
Yeah, I can never get through the book.
Oh, you know what I was going to say is I've already been solicited through a chiropractic management firm who is, I like this guy, but he's wicked onto, and he's already using Ferriss's book. So there's already ontos out there that have jumped onto this, and they're saying, I'm living this life, and if you should read this book and read about it, and then I can show you how to do it. So he's saying, read Tim Ferriss's book, and then pay me $10,000, and I'll show you how to live this life.
Interesting.
See 5,000 people in 2 hours. That'll be the next chiropractic application of this crap.
Well, this guy's actually teaching you to run a mail. He's teaching you to run stuff out. He's kind of teaching you outside of chiropractic, but same idea. He's actually teaching you to read to do mail order business. This is Ben Altadonna. Altadonna's a really bright guy, but he jumped right on.
There is not a business book or a shortcut or a beat-the-system book that the chiropractors have not read, digested, and made a tattoo of in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
They love this stuff. I'm not surprised they're jumping up and down and waving this flag at this point. But like you said, they'll distort it and make it into some Anto model, and it'll be part of a big escape weekend to Cancun for $9,000. You can meet Tim and his family and whatever.
Yeah.
Oof. So, all right, turning our attention to the somascopes.
And then Tim won't show up.
What's that?
And then Tim being eco won't show up.
No, he'll mail it in via satellite or something from Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So anyway, looking at August now, where the eco week is winding down. It's going to end on Sunday the 5th. So we come out of the pool, and August 6th we begin exoing again. So now we're going from, this is going to be a very confusing week coming up, because now we're going from motivation and eco and vacation and jacuzzi time to now we're dealing with the third interface of the six, which deals with trust and emotion, all the things that exos really love to do. Let's get into our deep trust mode now with our resident exo. Let's have a knee-to-knee chat with someone who doesn't like to experience human emotions at all, let alone trust. So that's what's coming up next week. As we kind of, we're starting to wind down. This is the last 4 weeks of the somatic summer, which ends on, coincidentally, on Labor Day, September 3rd. So next week is one of those ones where the patterns underneath and the way that we interact is going to go counter the other direction from where we're being guided from on the surface. So all the impersonal stuff, all the tools, technology, systems, and things like that, that's going to be your source for clarity next week. But underneath that is going to be this tug of war to trust those tools and technologies and things you use like you would a person. So if you have a regular habit of yelling at your computer like an eco, you might want to pet your computer next week or do a little Reiki on it as Professor Val might do. Be nice to your car. I kicked my car the other day for about 5 minutes. I kicked every tire. I kicked the seats. I kicked everything. I kept calling it stupid. And who's stupid? Me or the car getting kicked? Because I was just tired of having to fix this thing. And so there's a lot of stuff that you can do next week that if you're feeling like the relationship isn't working out with you and whatever technology you have, get rid of it. Do a Tim and just say, dump it, dump it, dump it. And so the Philos had to deal with this too, because Philos dealing with trust, no big deal. Philos dealing with trusting technology, ooh, they don't like that. They have to go where everyone else goes. So they always go the middle of the bell curve, and they always go, they have to get the consumer reports. They have to get all that support, all that information, so they can get past the emotional block of what if it doesn't work out, what if it's too expensive, what if the guy's rooking me. So there's a lot of that going on. So with firewalls, it's much more about resisting the temptation to get the group think going before you buy some new technology or create a new folder in your computer or something like that. And be a little more, be a little more independent of them, of the herd, because the XO is not going to let you down. The XO, it's a very binary system. It's yes or no, not a lot of explanation, not a lot of depth, but it's simple in the sense that it gives you something fast. You're never going to be in bureaucracy with an XO.
Speaking of XOs, go check out at some point. Go check out the eighth blog comment on Tim's blog today. It's from the 28th. Go check out the eighth one.
No,
it's an XO entry. It's pretty funny.
Okay, so Antos and XOs next week. Firewalls have their issues with trusting the technology too, and ECOs, of course, it's the emotion of when technology fails you. Do you react or do you just respond and ground yourself? The Antos, of course, the Exos are like their kryptonite. So the Antos, it's like they have to acknowledge that that, like as John from Cincinnati might say, the internet is big, and that their world that they live in their head is not the same size as the world that they live in outside their head. So it for an Anto, it's to recognize the vastness of information that's out there and to look at the way ideas are spreading in their worldview. What top three beliefs do they have and where are they traveling this week? And really look at the technology, trusting it as a turbulent mirror to say, okay, well, are my ideas advancing? Are they plateauing? Are they starting to stagnate? And just see, do I really want to keep these ideas? Maybe they're limiting me anymore. So you can do a lot of editing that way. And finally, the Exos during Exo Week with Trust, leave them alone. I'm going to just tell you real simple. There's nothing many, 9% of the population. Next week is sort of like, because it's the last week of the summer, and we're going to be getting ready to go into fall, which is an eco season.
Yay!
The ecos are going to be going into full thermonuclear retreat starting next week. And they don't come back until Christmas time when we get to winter. So they hate the eco season. So because it's all emotional and gooey and diverse and nasty and jungly. So they tend to just look at the fall as like if they can just stick with their routine and just get their work done, they'll be fine. So it's like the worker bee mentality will come out with them next week, and you just want to support them in the sense of giving them something, a task to do for you that maybe you, like delegate to an EXO next week. It should be delegate to an EXO week. Just give them a task that you normally wouldn't give them. Kind of make them your virtual assistant even if they aren't. And they'll never bother you, but they'll get something done for you. So it's like if you have a favor to call in, the person has to be an EXO. Next week's the week to do that. So there's your somascopes for this week. So we'll turn it over to Jeb with the tip of the week.
The Soma tip of the week. Will the real you please stand up? Who are you? Those are questions that you need to ask yourself this week. Are you a husband, father, sister, wife, brother, plumber, etc.? Throughout the day, when you're in different situations, ask yourself these questions. And what you'll find is sometimes you're being Philo, sometimes you're being Anto, sometimes you're being Eco, and sometimes you're being Exo. If you're not, then you're not a naked Soma. You're kind of closed down. And really think about it because, you know, we all identify, you know, I'm Philo. That's my bias. Mark and Valor are Ecos. But really, they Philo plenty, they Exo plenty, and they Anto plenty. It's just that the compass does point back, but during the day, in all these different environments, think about it. Ask those questions. Who's the real me? Who is the real you? And see how you feel about that, because there's this whole idea of authenticity and being able to jump among these domains, and that's what makes you a naked Soma or an open Soma. On to Val for the quote of the week.
Well, since we've been talking about our pal Tim and how he doesn't run with the tribe, he does his own thing, I thought I would go to Jody Foster for this one. Here it is. Normal is not something to aspire to. It's something to get away from. So get rid of that 40-hour week.
And as I say sometimes, you know, if you take the word normal out of your lexicon and never use that word again, call it a normalectomy, then boredom and anxiety go away, too, at the same time.
That's right.
So. All right, well, we have covered our first Soma star, so next week we'll be looking at an Exo Soma star to be named later, so we refer to the blog for that. And for Dr. Jeb Thurman and Professor Val up there in Bartholand, this is Dr. Mark saying travel light through the darkness. We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.